The Assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, it is divisional round weekend. This is usually the best weekend of the playoff football. I mean, these are usually the best games. Usually. I mean, not always, but it's for some reason the divisional round is just always powerhouse, crazy games, weird upsets. It's just always an excellent round of football to watch. And we do have us a doozy, of course, but let's get right into it. We got two games on Saturday, two games on Sunday. So let's begin with the first game on Saturday, the Houston Texans at the Kansas City Chiefs. Right now, the Chiefs are an 8-point favorite. Texans, their defense has been fantastic all season. But last week, they showed the world that what I mean by they are a smack-you-in-the-mouth defense, because that's what I've been calling them all season long, smack-you-in-the-mouth defense. That's what they do. They're fantastic. And I feel like the Chiefs better watch out in this one, because this defense, if they play like they did in this last game, they're going to have problems because this offensive line has not been that great. And they don't have a lot of weapons outside of Patrick Mahomes, so it's a very shaky offense. And the Chiefs defense has had its moments. They started off the season very well, but now their secondary has been getting blown up. So the Texans offense is really the key to me in this game. Are they going to show up, or are they going to be that very shaky, mediocre offense? And, like I said, they've had their moments where they've been able to actually show they're a pretty decent offense. But for the most part, this offense has been very, very shaky, especially on the offensive line. So we'll see what happens there. But I feel like that's going to be the key factor for the Texans just on the offensive side of the ball, because they have no issues defensively. But here's the thing. They're going up against the Kansas City Chiefs, the two-time defending champs. Pretty much the Chiefs' entire season has been their opponent, has shit the bed, and basically just let them win the game. And that doesn't mean the Chiefs are a bad team. It just means they have that mystique. That's what the Patriots used to have, that mystique where you would just Jedi mind trick your way out of a win and let them win. And that's kind of what I feel like is going to happen in this game. And as a matter of fact, I will predict to you how this game is going to end. I predict that the Texans will be up 21-20. It'll be the fourth quarter, and let's just say it's about a minute. Let's go with about a minute 35 on the clock. So that's a lot of time left for Patrick Mahomes. But I foresee the Chiefs getting the ball. I foresee them, the Texans really just getting them. And they make it look like it's going to be a Texans win. And then all of a sudden, we'll go fourth and eight. And Patrick Mahomes drops back the pass, and he can't find anybody. And Will Anderson Jr. is going to wrap him up. And it's going to look like it's going to be a sack. And Mahomes is going to get his way out of it like he always does. He's going to run up the sideline, get the first down, and get his team into field goal range. And the Chiefs will have a walk-off field goal win, 23-21. That is literally my prediction on what's going to happen, because that's how the Chiefs' season has always been. Everybody's always afraid to hit Patrick Mahomes, because, of course, you don't want to get that flag. But at this point, I kind of feel like just light the dude up. Just do it. If you get a flag, you get a flag, but at least you lit the dude up at some point. But, I just don't really see the Chiefs losing. They had a bye week. They haven't played in, I think, 24 days, something like that. And they're the defending champs. They've been here many times before. They know how it's done. And unfortunately, the Texans, I don't think, are going to be that team that's able to stop them. I do think their defense is going to make this a very interesting game. I think they're going to make some big plays. But just in the end, I have a feeling they're going to crumble, as everyone has that's played the Kansas City Chiefs leading up to this point in the season. And so I've got the Chiefs headed to yet another AFC championship game. Then the second game on Saturday is the Washington Commanders at the Detroit Lions. Right now, the Lions are a 9-point favorite. And you know me, I already predicted that my winner for the Super Bowl this year is the Detroit Lions. And I think this is a good way for them to get started. As a matter of fact, I think this is going to be a comeback down-to-earth game for the Washington Commanders. I think they played a fantastic game last week. I think they're a fun rising team to watch. But I think at some point they're going to get smacked in the mouth, and I think this is going to be that game. I think the Lions, like I keep saying, best team in the league. They play the best football. They have zero weaknesses. It doesn't matter if they're injured. It doesn't matter where they play. It doesn't matter how they play. It doesn't matter the weather. There are zero things that matter with this team, and I just think the Detroit Lions are going to come right out the gate, and I think they are poised, primed, and ready for a Super Bowl run, and it's going to begin against the Washington Commanders. I don't think this is going to be a close game. As a matter of fact, I think it's going to be a Detroit blowout because that's what Detroit has done all season long. I've got Detroit blowing out the Redskins to Commanders 35-20. Then our Sunday games, we have the Los Angeles Rams at the Philadelphia Eagles. Right now, the Eagles are a 6-point favorite. The Rams are such a weird team. They're so inconsistent, but then they played so well last week. But, I mean, who knows what that means. That just means they played one good game. Whereas the Eagles, they've been way more consistent than the Rams this year, but it is the playoffs, so it doesn't really matter. But I do kind of feel like the Eagles have a lot more firepower on offense and a lot more experience as well when you compare the Eagles offense to the Rams defense. The Rams defense, while they've shown a lot of, they just are a really, really good defense, they still have issues, and I think that's going to come into play in this one. I feel like the Eagles are going to ride Saquon Barkley as they have all season long. I think he's just going to have yet another good game, and I think he's going to make the big plays that matter in the end. I also feel like this Eagles defense is going to step it up. They've been one of the top defenses in the league all season long, and I think they're going to make the day difficult for Matthew Stafford. And I have the Eagles winning a close one, and I think it's going to be a low-scoring affair because apparently it's supposed to be snowing in Philly this day, so that means I feel like it's going to be a ground attack game, perfect game for Saquon Barkley, who I think is going to be, of course, I feel like he's, me personally, everybody's arguing over Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson, as you should, but to me, Saquon Barkley is the MVP of the league, 2,000 yards, and he's a huge difference maker for his team, and I think he's going to be the difference maker in this one. I've got the Eagles winning a close one, 21-17. Then, of course, we rounded out with the best game of the weekend, and that is going to be the Baltimore Ravens at the Buffalo Bills. Right now, the Ravens are a 1-point favorite. Now, that's because the Ravens kicked the shit out of the Bills earlier this year, and it wasn't even close. It was just a complete demolition by the Ravens. I don't think that's going to be the case this time. I do think the Bills are going to step it up and actually play a much, much better game than they did in the regular season. I do think this is going to be a smash-mouth game, but I do think it's going to be a battle between Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen. The two guys have obviously had amazing seasons, and I've felt it from the Ravens for about the last month of football. I just feel like this team is ready. They've worked on all their issues that they've had throughout the season, as you should, and they've improved and become a much better team, and they are going to be a difficult team for anybody to stop. And I think the Bills are going to have their issues. I think it's going to be an offensive battle between two really good teams, but I just think when it comes down to it, I just kind of feel like Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry are going to be way too much for the Bills to stop, and I've got the Ravens winning a close one, 31-28. All right, Joe, let's get to the week of NBA. We actually had some crazy games this week, and we had some good matchups. We had some huge blowouts. But there are two teams this season that basically have gone from the worst teams last season to actually competitive teams this year, and that is the Detroit Pistons and the Houston Rockets. So on Monday night, the Detroit Pistons took out the New York Knicks in a crazy battle, 124-119. And, I mean, the Knicks, they ain't no joke, but the Detroit Pistons kind of made him look like one. Cade Cunningham, he has been their dude all season long. He dropped 36 points in a big game for the Detroit Pistons. Now, I wouldn't call them a championship-level team, but they've been playing much improved basketball from last year. I mean, they were the worst, historically probably the worst basketball team of all time. And they are actually now a competitive team that's actually beat good teams. And the Knicks, they are a good team. And Cade Cunningham, he has just been on fire for the most part this season. Then also on Monday, the Houston Rockets beat the Memphis Grizzlies in a crazy contentious battle. 120 to 118. Jalen Green dropped 42 points in this one. And Houston just battled back and forth. Ja had an amazing game. This is a division battle, by the way, but these two teams just really went at each other, and just Houston was able to hang on and get the win. Then on Tuesday, Milwaukee smashed the Sacramento Kings 130 to 115. Giannis had a huge game. He had a triple-double with 33 points, 11 rebounds, and 13 assists. So he had an amazing night as he continues his amazing run on the season. Then on Wednesday, we had the Toronto Raptors beat the Boston Celtics 110 to 97. This game wasn't even really close. And this snapped a 10-game losing streak from the Toronto Raptors. This was actually their first win over the Boston Celtics since March 28th of 2022. So it's been quite some time since the shitty-ass Raptors have beat the Boston Celtics. And it's just notable because, you know, I keep talking about the Celtics. They're a good team, but they've not had a good, like, 3 weeks now. So obviously, I expect them to still be a good team, a competitive team throughout the all the way up leading to the championship, of course. But that's a terrible loss that they took against a very bad Toronto Raptors team who owned them the majority of that game. Then the Houston Rockets had another big game over the week on Wednesday. They beat the Denver Nuggets 128 to 108, and this game was not even close. Houston was just killing it. Green dropped 34 points. And that's the thing about this Houston Rockets team. It feels like every game they have a new standout player who is the star of the game, basically. And they're just so good defensively. Like I keep saying, they are excellent in the paint. They lead the league in rebounds. And they are just they're just a very scrappy team. I don't, like I keep saying about them, I don't know if I believe in them just yet. But they are a really good team. Then also on Wednesday, the Los Angeles Clippers got their largest margin of victory in their team history over the Brooklyn Nets. They got the win 126 to 67. Yes, 126 to 67. It was a pathetic game from the Brooklyn Nets from start to finish. I don't even know how they continued this game. I don't know why they didn't just forfeit the game. Obviously, I'm joking because you can't do that, but that was so terrible. I had to mention it on the show because it was just such a bad and horrific game. And I mean, it was so out of hand in the first quarter that it was just, I can't believe the Brooklyn Nets even were able to walk out of their locker room with their heads held high in that one, because that was a terrible showing from the Brooklyn Nets. And then last night was supposed to be the game of the week between the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Cleveland Cavaliers, because these are the two top teams in the league. Last week they had a battle between each other, and the Cleveland Cavaliers got the win. Well, Oklahoma City took note, and last night's game was not even close. It was all Oklahoma City all night. They got the win 134 to 114. SGA dropped 40 points and had 8 assists. And, you know, Oklahoma City, they look pretty legit. I mean, so do the Cavaliers. These two teams, it's going to be interesting to see if they actually do end up making the finals, because both of them are playing on pace to be the two teams to make the finals. I mean, they're both playing excellent basketball, offensively, defensively. They've got the superstars. They really haven't had any losing streaks. And this is probably the worst loss for the Cavaliers on the season, so lose to the best team in the league like that. I mean, it sucks, but I mean, at least it wasn't to like the Brooklyn Nets or something terrible like that. So, but Oklahoma City took note, and they definitely put their stamp on their season last night. So moving on to the top five list this week, since Monday we have a national championship between Ohio State and Notre Dame. These are two legendary colleges that actually have had quite historic players come out of both of these colleges. So I decided we are going to do the top five Ohio State football legends, and we're going to do the top five Notre Dame football legends, because this was a difficult list to whittle down. And all these guys that I'm going to be talking about, they not only had fantastic college careers, but they went on to the NFL to have, some of them, Hall of Fame level football careers. So these are, we're going to start with Ohio State, and then we'll do Notre Dame. So we'll start with the top five Ohio State football legends, beginning with number five. this should come as no shock to you since if you heard the intro to the show, the song is called Jack Tatum. So I always give shout-outs to Jack Tatum because he is a fantastic football player, legend in my eyes. So number five, Jack Tatum. He went to Ohio State. He played for Ohio State from 1968 to 1970, and then he was drafted by the Oakland Raiders and would go on to have not only a fantastic career with Ohio State, but he also would go on to have a fantastic career with the Oakland Raiders as well. Then at number four on my top five Ohio State football legends, I have running back Eddie George. He played for Ohio State from 1992 to 1995. He was a fantastic running back for Ohio State. As a matter of fact, he is considered one of the greatest just Ohio State football players, hands down, of all time. He pretty much rushed for 1,000 yards every year of his entire career from Ohio State all the way up until his NFL career. He's most known for being a Tennessee Titan. He did play for a couple of other teams, my Dallas Cowboys included. He was kind of washed up by then, but still, I always loved Eddie George. I thought he was a great running back to watch, but he's most notably known as a Tennessee Titan. And he had a fantastic career, Hall of Fame level career. So not only did he excel in Ohio State, but he took that career and moved it all the way on down to the NFL and has cemented his legendary status in both college and the pro sports. Then at number three on my top five Ohio State football legends, I have offensive lineman Orlando Pace. He was with Ohio State from 1994 to 1996. He was actually one of the most highly sought after guys in this draft. I mean, he was just top level guy, and he would get drafted by the St. Louis Rams. He would actually win a Super Bowl with the St. Louis Rams. He would be a part of one of the most prolific offenses of all time in the NFL. But he just really excelled both at Ohio State and in the NFL. And he is a Hall of Fame player who blocked for the best. I mean, Marshall Faulk is one of the greatest running backs of all time. And part of the reason why is because Orlando Pace was right in front of him, blocking for him. Then at number two on my top five Ohio State football legends, wide receiver Chris Carter. Played for Ohio State from 1984 to 1986. Then he would get drafted by the Philadelphia Eagles, who would end up dropping him. And he would actually, because he did not have a good time with the Eagles. It was a very contentious time for him with the Eagles. As a matter of fact, he basically got kicked to the curb. Everybody thought Chris Carter was going to go nowhere till he got picked up by the Vikings. And he would go on to be literally one of the greatest wide receivers of all time. He is one of the greatest route runners. He has some of the greatest pairs of hands you will ever see. And if you did not get to see Chris Carter play as a wide receiver, you are missing out. Yes, there are many legends of the game. I think Chris Carter does get overlooked in certain occasions because he did play in an era with Jerry Rice. And, of course, Jerry Rice is literally one of the greatest football players of all time. And then also Chris Carter had Randy Moss on his team at the same time as well. So sometimes that gets overlooked as well. But if you watched Chris Carter, which I did, you know he's one of the greatest to ever do it. And he was the greatest to ever do it in college and in the pros. Hall of Fame player, by the way, as well. But number one on my top five Ohio State football legend is Archie Griffin. He played, he was running back from 1972 to 1975 for Ohio State. He is actually the only two-time Heisman winner ever. He was drafted by the Cincinnati Bengals, would actually go to the Super Bowl with the Cincinnati Bengals, had a pretty solid career, but his career with Ohio State definitely overshadows his time with the Cincinnati Bengals, of course. But, you know, being a two-time Heisman winner, the only time that's ever happened. But, I mean, you look at the stats, this guy was a bruiser. He ran over every single body those 2 years he won the Heisman. So that's who I've got at number one. You can't beat that, in my opinion. It doesn't matter compared to the other four guys, his pro career was probably the least impressive of them. But the fact that he won two Heismans, that puts you at number one. I'm sorry. So then moving on to the top five Notre Dame football legends. And got to say, this was more difficult than the Ohio State one because I didn't actually realize how many legends have played at Notre Dame, which it shouldn't shock me, but it was actually very difficult. Even the five, I knew who number one was going to be, but after that, I was like, wow, this is tough. So beginning with number five is a player that I know a lot of people these days don't know, but he is, not only was he a legend at Notre Dame, but he is one of the greatest football players ever, and that is Paul Hornung, who played fullback, running back, for his time at Notre Dame, and then also played with the Green Bay Packers. But he played for Notre Dame from 1954 to 1956, so that's why a lot of people don't know who he is. He played with the legendary Lombardi Packers, who won everything, and he was why. I mean, actually, he was an MVP. That's how good Paul Hornung actually was. In this era, he's a Hall of Fame player, fantastic. And even when I was ranking this, I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I couldn't even put Paul Hornung at number one, because you think you could make an argument definitely for him at number one because of just how fantastic both of his careers were in college and in the pros. Then at number four in my top five Notre Dame football legends, Jerome Bettis, running back from 1990 to 1992. He was drafted by the Pittsburgh Steelers, and his entire career was with the Pittsburgh Steelers. He ended his career by winning a Super Bowl. He is also a Hall of Fame level running back as well. And also just Notre Dame legend. When you actually look up the stats and just what he's done, and when you actually look at the rankings too, most Notre Dame fans actually put him like at number one as the greatest running back of all time, even over Hornung. So that says a lot about how well-liked he is by the Notre Dame faithful. But, I mean, he's also the same too with Pittsburgh. I mean, everybody in Pittsburgh loved the bus. And at number three on my top five Notre Dame football legends, defensive end Alan Page. This was another one where I was like, I can't believe I'm not putting him at number one. Another one where I'm sure a lot of you people don't know who he is because he played in the early days. He was drafted by the Minnesota Vikings. He did play his time at Notre Dame from 1964 to 66, so in the 60s. But if you don't know Alan Page, you need to go look up Alan Page. This guy, he actually won an MVP. He is a defensive player who won an MVP. That is how dominating this guy was. He played for the Purple People Eaters. That's what kind of a legend he was. He is one of the craziest, most insane, most awesome defensive players you will ever watch in your life. And he was amazing. And it was real hard for me to not put him at number one because that's how much respect I have for Alan Page. And not only was he a fantastic defensive player, but after his NFL career, he would go on to be a Supreme Court justice in the state of Minnesota. How crazy is that? So not only was he a legend on the football field, but then he would go on and have like a legitimate career afterwards. Then at number two on my top five Notre Dame legends, I have Tim Brown, played wide receiver from 1984 to 1987 for Notre Dame, and then would go on and play with the Oakland / Los Angeles Raiders / Oakland Raiders again. Tim Brown is another one kind of in the same category as Chris Carter, where I feel like he got overshadowed because there were a lot of fantastic wide receivers in this 80s, 90s era, but they all get overshadowed by Jerry Rice because Jerry Rice was that great. But I mean, Tim Brown was another one. He was so consistent. He never bitched. I mean, he played with this Oakland team, and he never complained. He was on some of the shittiest teams. He was on teams that would go to the Super Bowl. He never, ever complained. He always just went out there, did his job, and was just a great receiver to watch. But at number one on my top five Notre Dame football legends, to me it was the easiest choice, and that is quarterback Joe Montana. He played quarterback from 1974 to 1978, would get drafted by the San Francisco 49ers, and go on to be one of the greatest football players of all time, actually would begin the greatest quarterback talk of all time until Tom Brady came around and pushed him out of the way. It took a long time for that to happen, and even so, Joe Montana, it doesn't matter, one of the greatest to ever do it, and he was great in college, great in the pros, and also another Hall of Fame player. So that is my top five Ohio State and Notre Dame football legends. And we will get into the college football playoff championship on Monday's show. But until then, enjoy the weekend of sports, and I will talk to you fools on Monday.